I felt when I was in college, I had this huge amount of momentum, right? And I left, and I didn't get that momentum back until I became a business owner and I started working for myself. It took me 15 years. And the reality is that the college system teaches you how to be a really good employee.
Broadcasting from Boston, Massachusetts, you're listening to the Technology Equals Equality Podcast.
Welcome back to the Technology Equals Equality Podcast. I'm your host, Lori Brooks, and this is episode 77. Dr. Matt Motil is a real estate agent and investor. Through research and firsthand experiences, Dr. Motil leveraged his passions to become an author, mentor, teacher, blogger, a contributor to the Good Men Project, and a host of the Cashflow Kings podcast. Dr. Motil has worked with hundreds of investors from all over the world, helping them grow massive wealth and passive income through remote real estate investments. While building passive income portfolios, Dr. Motil leads a retail real estate team working with buyers and sellers in all 50 states. In his spare time, he teaches as an adjunct professor at a handful of colleges and universities. Dr. Motil is a professional at helping people fire their boss and punch their day job in the mouth. Here to help you unlock your passions and achieve your highest potential, Dr. Matt Motil. Dr. Motil, welcome and thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me on.
Certainly. So before we jump into your business and your journey as an entrepreneur, I'd love for you to tell us a story. We're going to rewind just a little bit, way back before you began a business of any sort. Let's think about childhood. Go back to high school, junior high. Tell me a story of what you thought life would be like before you got on.
Sure. Well, you know, it's interesting because that's I tell a little bit of that story in my book. And I kind of came up through, you know, the middle class America, and my parents were both college educated, and we, my brother and I, it wasn't a question of if we're going to go to college. It was a question of what are you going to study and where you're going to go. It wasn't an option for us. And so we were raised, and I don't want to say brainwashed because that's really like it has negative connotations to it, but we were really raised with this mindset of the only path to be successful is to go to college, get good grades so that you can go get a good job, and have a family and do all that kind of stuff. And so from a very early age, I approached high school with the thought of I've got to focus to where my resume or my application for colleges looks solid so that I can get into the schools I want to get into. So I took AP classes, I took college classes while I was a high school student, and I really focused my efforts on building that solid college application. It wasn't focused on being a high school kid and having a good time and all that kind of stuff. It was really a different mindset. I took that same mindset into college, and it was like, I've got to focus, I've got to get good grades, I've got to have a really solid resume of community service and athletics and, you know, all that kind of stuff so that when I go out into industry, I can get the best job so that I can, you know, put myself on this path to success. So that's kind of the mindset that I always had growing up, was that was the path to success, was the college route, which it can be for a lot of people. And obviously I have a doctorate, so I went to college a lot. And there's a whole different story behind that. But, you know, as I've become a business owner and entrepreneur and things of that nature, I've realized that college isn't for everybody. And I used to say that phrase or that statement, meaning that some people are meant to go to school and some people aren't dedicated enough, aren't disciplined enough, aren't smart enough. And the reality is that the college system teaches you how to be a really good employee. And if you want to be a business owner, there's some good things that you can take away from college, but it's not necessarily for everybody. And you see some of the best entrepreneurs that we think of, you know, like the Bill Gates and the, you know, Mark Zuckerberg and guys like that who went to college, dropped out because they realized that this isn't preparing me for what I want to do, right? And so I had to unlearn a lot of stuff as a business owner that I thought I knew. It's been an interesting journey for sure.
Excellent. So tell us about being in school and preparing for what you thought was going to be a career of some sort. Is that what you're stating, that you kind of grew up with the thought process that you would go to school and end up with a job, a career of some sort? But as you were in school, at some point, you had a moment of recognition yourself, or was it post-school where you had that moment of recognition in which you decided, I don't really want to be an employee, I want to run the business myself?
Right. Well, yeah, so what ended up happening was I joined a fraternity, which most people would be like, wow, this kind of went in a different direction than what I was thinking. But I joined a fraternity, and it wasn't the normal, like, haze the crap out of everybody kind of thing. We did some of that too, but we had a different mindset. It was like the fraternity was Sigma Phi Epsilon, and they since I was in college, they've gone completely away from hazing altogether. And they really focus on this, like, they call it healthy mind, healthy body philosophy of, mm-hmm. we want you to have a good time, but we want you to get good grades. We want you to do sports, but we want you to do community service. So it's mm-hmm. this balance of all of your aspects of your life. It's really trying to teach young men how to be balanced leaders. So it's a really good program. They call it the Balanced Man Program. But anyway, so when I was in college, there was a group of guys that we were all in engineering classes together, and that we were all in the same fraternity, and we would sit around and we would kind of complain about, you know, why did they pick this theme for homecoming? That's stupid. Or why did they do this? Or I wish they would do this differently on, you know, tailgating for football games or whatever it would be. And I don't know exactly who had the idea. I don't want to take credit for it. I'm sure I was part of it. But what we thought was, well, what if I joined some other organizations on campus? Mm-hmm. So I'm going to join some of these things where that group has the ability to influence the decisions on certain things. Mm-hmm. And if I worked my way up into the executive group, let's say I was the president of, you know, Mortarboard, and Mortarboard decides what happens for Songfest or whatever. So if I'm in charge of that group, then I obviously have the ability to influence the decision-making process in that group. Mm-hmm. And so what we decided was, we had a chapter at the time of about 40 guys, and I said, what if all of us join two things and we make it a requirement? And then we require that everybody tries to get on the executive board of at least one thing. And so what we did was, we systematically took over campus. And it worked. And the cool thing was, we not only did it with campus organizations, we ran student government, we ran the fraternity and sorority council, we ran all of these things that planned homecoming, we planned like this big Songfest event that they did, we planned events for tailgating for football games, I mean, mm-hmm. you know, holiday parades. I mean, we were in charge of pretty much anything. So it was like, if we wanted to do it, we did it the way we wanted to do it. It was really cool. There's a lot of power in that. There's a lot of ego in that.
Right.
And during that process of being able to have this vision and then be able to implement it and then see the power that comes with that decision making and that responsibility and all that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. I was like, I don't want to give this up. Like, this is awesome. And because of how I was raised and the mindset that I had had up to that point, I thought, okay, I don't want to just be an employee. I don't just want to be a cog in the machine. I want to get to the point where I'm basically like the CEO. Mm-hmm. And so my vision was, I need to work my way up the ladder in industry to become this, like, you know, to become the boss and become the person who's running the company. Mm-hmm. It, as a 19, 20, 21-year-old kid, it really didn't, there was a disconnect there of, it's one thing to run the company, it's another thing to own it, right? Mm-hmm. And so I wasn't really thinking that I'm going to be the owner of the company. I didn't necessarily want to have, or I didn't even think that that was a possibility. I didn't have that mindset of, I'm going to go out and create something new. Mm-hmm. It was just, I know that I want to be in control, I want to be in power, and that's really kind of what I thought. And I thought, I'm setting myself on this trajectory to get there fast. I wanted to, you know, I was like, I took over campus, and we were a right. Division I big school. I mean, I went to Toledo for my engineering degree, so it was a big school. Mm-hmm. And I thought, all right, we just took over campus. And then what we started doing was we started taking over stuff outside of campus. Like, there'd be bars and nightclubs. We'd have every bartender, every bouncer would be fraternity brothers. Like, literally, you didn't wait in line. You got lots of free drinks. Like, it was cool. I mean, you start to get to the – it was almost like this mob mentality. I mean, not from a bad standpoint, but from a good standpoint.
Right.
Of it was like, wow, we really control stuff. Mm-hmm. And so it was like, all right, I've taken over the campus. We've now started to take over the city. I'm set to take over the world. Like, that was the mindset when I left college, was I'm ready to take over the world. And you realize very, very quickly when you leave college and you leave that bubble, so to speak, and you enter industry as a recent college grad, is nobody cares about what you did in college. Nobody cares about what grades you got. Nobody cares about what you did. And it's like, here, we hired you for this job. Plug in, do what you're told. And then I'd be like, well, what if we did it this way? But we don't. No, we do it this way. We don't care about what you think. Plug in, shut up, put your head down, and work. And it was like, okay, well, this kind of stinks. And what I realized was, okay, maybe when I get to the point where I'm the guy telling me what to do, I'll be happy. And so my whole focus was, move up the corporate ladder, move up the food chain as fast as I possibly can, separate myself from everybody else as fast as I possibly can, to the point where I'm now in charge and I'm in control. Because I knew that that was how I was wired, and I thought, okay, I'm unhappy doing this, but maybe when I'm the boss of all of the people that I work with, then I'll be happy. And I would get there, and I'd be like, nope, still not happy. And so I was like, okay, what do I need to do? You know, and when I left school and I had an engineering degree, it was like, well, there's all these people that have engineering degrees. What do I need to do to separate myself from everybody else? And one of the biggest things for people that have engineering degrees is to actually go get a license, which requires a lot of training, and it's a huge amount of testing. And it takes about 4 years at least to get a license. And so I did that. I got licensed. I still actually, even though I'm not really using it, I still am licensed in a couple states. As an engineer, and I don't think I'll ever give that up, because I'd never, if I ever decided to do that again, I would never want to take that test again, because it was just awful. It's like an 8-hour exam. So I was always looking for that angle. I was always looking for that edge. And so then it became, okay, now I'm in this very elite group of people that actually has an engineering license, but there's other people that are my peers that have that too. So what do I need to do to separate myself? And so I would go get credentials, or I would go get other certificates or licenses or things like that. And so it was just, you know, I was not just Matt Motil. Then I was Matt Motil PE. And then it was, okay, I'm going to go get an MBA. So I was Matt Motil MBA PE. And then I was going to, I got certified in green construction. So that I had like the LEED credential. And then I got certified in erosion and sediment control. And it was just like, I started to get this alphabet soup behind my name. And the majority of the people that would see it were like, dude, you're missing like Z and X, and you got everything else. Like, what the hell does all that mean? And the reality was, it was like, it meant something to me, and to certain people it meant something, but to everybody else, like, they would look at CPESC and they'd be like, dude, what the hell is that? Like, we don't even know what that is. But the thing was, every time I got to a new level in an organization and I felt like I'd stalled out again, I got bored. And so it was, okay, I'm going to go get something else to try to springboard me to the next level. And sometimes that was some kind of credential or license or something like that. And sometimes it was going back to school. Right. And so every time I got burnt out and I got bored, I just go get more education, either in certificates or degrees or whatever it would be, thinking that that would be what it would take to propel me to the next level. And all along this whole process, I was very naive as to how people view that and how people see that. You know, the thing is, the day I graduated with my MBA, you know, I left work on Friday and I was Matt, the project manager. I got back to work on Monday, now having walked across the stage to get my MBA, and I was now Matt MBA. And I was like, everyone should be like, dude, that's awesome. Good job. Like, you know, here's your promotion. Here's your raise. The reality is, in the grand scheme of life, like you were getting better every day that you went through that process, right? So the company's been reaping the benefits slowly over time of the fact that you're doing this, you're sacrificing, you're doing the education, all that kind of stuff. The fact that you're now, you know, you left work on Friday, you came back Monday, you're the same dude. You're no different.
Right.
And the reality is, you really aren't. I mean, now, yeah, now you got a piece of paper on the wall that says that you're smarter, but you're no more valuable to the organization on Monday than you were on Friday.
Right.
And to them, they don't see that. They don't see that value.
Right.
If you want some, you know, if you get a new degree and you want to feel appreciated for what you just did, you got to go work for somebody else. Because when you fill out a resume or you fill out an application and you put down, I've got this and I've got this, people go, ooh, that's impressive. We don't have somebody that has that, so you must be special. And the reality is, yes, you are. You are special. But to your current employer, you're not. And so it's one of those things that I had to learn the hard way was, if you think you're going to start with company A and you're going to retire with company A, and along the way you're going to go get all this stuff, there's a good chance that they aren't going to care. Or they aren't going to see the true value in it. And that was a little that was a hard lesson to learn for me.
You know, you have to really push yourself to put your accomplishments in front of those that are going to actually pay attention and try to find that time for them to pay attention in if you intend to start with company A and leave with company A. Now, has it been done throughout history? Definitely there's people who have done that. But that is in history. And we're in 2017 today.
It's a totally
you know what I mean?
It's a totally different world.
Exactly. The world that our parents grew up in and had the ability to retire after 40-plus years of service to whatever company is not the day and age that we live in at all. And making sure that you push yourself is definitely the thing. So what do you feel like was one of – was that moment for you as you recognized, you know what, I've gotten the job, I've gotten the degrees, I continue educating myself, I'm attempting to move forward, but you weren't reaching that level of excitement, motivation, you know, the drive wasn't there for you. What was that aha moment for you that switched it?
I think it was a couple things. One was when I graduated with my doctorate, I really thought that a couple things. One, people would really care about that. And the reality is that there's really only three paths, in my personal opinion, for somebody who completes a terminal degree like that. Is one, you're going to go into research, because that's really geared up for people that have that kind of degree, because that's what a doctorate teaches you to do, is research. Or you're going to go into higher ed and teach. Or you're going to go start your own company. Because here's the thing. It's a very, very intimidating title for people that don't have it. So when I went and got a job, again, my current employer was like, hey, that's cool. You got a doctorate. Neat. So you're doctor, you know, but nobody felt comfortable calling you doctor, right? It's just weird. Because yesterday you weren't doctor, but today you are. So like we don't really, you know, it's like, why do I need to do this? So when I switched jobs and I went to a different company, you know, the guy that was the owner of the company was a privately held construction company. He had an accounting degree, so he didn't even have an engineering degree. And here I come in with an engineering degree, an MBA, and a PhD, and it was like, okay, there was this power struggle right from the get-go. The thing was, we had started to do. We had really started to take off with our rental business that we were doing, where we owned rental properties. We were growing our portfolio, and I was managing that. I was negotiating deals. I was growing our portfolio. I was managing the property ourselves. It was during that time the light bulb went off for me, where if you're a salaried employee and you're working for somebody else, if you put in 100% effort, you make the same amount of money as if you put in 80% effort. If you're salary, you make the same paycheck on Friday, whether you give half effort just to not get fired, or you put in 120% effort to go above and beyond. At the end of the day, your level of effort does not directly translate to output in terms of take-home pay and things of that nature. What I realized very quickly when I was doing my own thing and working for myself was if I work at 50% level, I earn this much. If I work at 80% level, oh, wow, I've made more. If I work at 100% effort, wow, I've made even more. So the level of effort directly translated to dollars or output, and that to me was when the light bulb went off and I was like, okay, I'm a smart guy, but sometimes it takes, you know, a little bit to go through the thick head. And it was like, okay, this is where it's at. Mm-hmm. Being an entrepreneur, being a business owner, doing my own thing, being the, so to speak, you know, having my own destiny in my hands or my own fate in my own hands, that's where it's at. Win or lose, right? There's more risk, but there's more reward. I remember, you know, I'm in the west side of Cleveland, Ohio, and, you know, the average household income in Cleveland's $26,000 a year.
Wow.
That's the household income. So that's basically two people making a minimum wage is what the average in Cleveland is. Now I live in the suburbs, and so the average is a little bit higher. But there's a main strip through my city, and it's got auto dealers on it. And so it starts with Mercedes-Benz, and then next to it's Porsche, and then next to that's Maserati, and then Aston Martin, and then Rolls-Royce. It just goes in line from, like, worst to best. And it starts with Benz, right, which, you know, most people are going to be like, hey, dude, I take a Mercedes today.
Right.
So I would drive down that strip because I had to drive it every day on my way home. And I would drive down there, and I'd look at these cars, and I'm like, who in the hell can afford to buy these things? Like, nobody can afford a $500,000 vehicle. I mean, that's what a Phantom costs, is a $500,000. And I'm like, my house doesn't even cost half of that, you know? And even entry-level Mercedes is probably, I don't know, 40 or 50 grand. Mm-hmm. So, and that's more than the average household income in the metro area. And here I am with this employee mindset thinking, like, I can work harder. I don't make any more. Who the hell is buying these things? Because the dealership's open, right? So they got to be selling something.
Exactly.
So somebody's buying these things, and occasionally you'd see one on the streets, and you're like, what's that dude do? And eventually you realize when you start your own operation that mm-hmm. you can leverage it to the point where, you know, now you sit there and you go, oh, okay, I get it. You know, I can see a 2-year plan or a 5-year plan where we've grown this and we've scaled it and things of that nature to where I'm like, huh. I don't know if a Rolls Royce is for me, personally, but you could be in a situation where, you know, all right, that makes sense. When I was an employee in construction, I left at the end of 2015. I was actually fired on New Year's Eve.
Wow.
And I was the only one that came to work. And I told you, like, the owner and I, it was contentious from the beginning. And I started there at the end of July. And on New Year's Eve, that was my last day. And so it was a whole, like, 6 months or 5 months or something. And the thing was, we had taken our rental business to the point where we were now earning enough money per month in cash flow mm-hmm. to cover our monthly expenses. So, you know, let's just say for easy math, our monthly expenses were $4,000 between car payments and house payment and, you know, student loan bills and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So once we were earning more than $4,000 a month after expenses and mortgage payments and all that kind of stuff, you really realized, okay, I could stop working and my rentals would cover my monthly expenses. So we were technically financially free. It was really cool. But one thing that really happens when you become financially free and you're an employee, you become a really bad employee. Because there's a certain level of, I don't want to call it indentured servitude, but there's a certain level of, I got to show up and I got to put up and I got to put up with all of the stuff that goes along with working for somebody else because mm-hmm. I need the paycheck, right? Mm-hmm. I've got to be a good employee. I was making good money, but I got to be a good employee because I can't afford to not get that paycheck next week, right? 75% of Americans still live paycheck to paycheck. It's reality. Mm-hmm. Whether good, bad, or otherwise, it's still the truth is that mm-hmm. most of us, if we didn't get paid next week, we'd be like, oh, crap, what am I going to do? It's only a matter of time before I'm out of cash and I'm in trouble. Right. So we have to put up with the crap that comes along with being an employee. If you're working in an organization that's a little toxic, which is where I always seem to be. But the thing was, once I no longer needed the job, no longer I needed the paycheck, I became an even worse employee because, you know, and I told you there was a power struggle with the owner, right? And so like Friday night at like 4 or 5 o'clock, I'd get a phone call at my desk and the owner would be like, hey, we got a mandatory meeting tomorrow at 7 on Saturday. And I'd be like, well, I got plans. I'm taking my kids to the zoo. I'm doing this or whatever. And I was teaching classes sometimes on Saturday mornings too. And so I was like, I need more notice than 5 p.m. on Friday. And he's like, what's a mandatory meeting? And I'm like, I just told you, like, I'm not going to be there. Mm-hmm. Is there an emergency that we are having a mandatory meeting? Well, no, but this is when it's convenient. And I was like, well, we can talk about it on Monday. Mm-hmm. He's like, no, you need to be here tomorrow. And I said, I don't think you understand. I just told you no. If you're the owner of the company, you don't want to be told that. Even if you're wrong, you don't want to be told that you're wrong and you don't want to be told no. It's just, it's an ego thing. And so part of the reason why I only lasted about 5 months there. But anyway, when we were to that point when I got fired, we had this hard conversation and it was like, okay, do I go get another job? Mm-hmm. Or do we take the leap? We weren't in a financial position where we felt comfortable. Like, I think, you know, when people ask me today, when will I know I'm ready? It's like when people ask me, when will I know I'm ready to have kids? You're never going to be ready. I mean, if you want to sit here and put a magic number of saying, I want to have this much money in the bank, I want to visit these countries, or whatever it would be, the problem is that life gets in the way and you're never going to be ready. Mm-hmm. You know, quote unquote ready. Yeah. Same thing. You know, I would recommend.
That's a great analogy.
You know, I would recommend that people probably have 3 to 6 months in their savings of mm-hmm. monthly expenses saved up before they pull the plug on their employer. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. The worst thing that you can possibly do when you want to start your own business is kind of like limp into it. There's no better motivator than no safety net. Mm-hmm. That's my personal opinion.
Right.
We weren't in a position where we had 6 months of expenses laying around to make us feel comfortable and warm and fuzzy. So what happened was there was no choice. Mm-hmm. You make it work or you're going to go back and have to get a job. Mm-hmm. And I made the decision of I'm done. I spent 15 years in industry and I hated every minute of it one way or the other. And I tried over and over again to make myself be okay with it and to be happy. And I just couldn't. And the thing was, I felt like there was something wrong with me. I felt like I was broken. And I started, so once I made the leap, I started interacting with other entrepreneurs. And what I realized really quickly, and one of my mentors is Alex Sharfin, who's pretty active on Facebook. He wrote a book called The Entrepreneurial Personality Type, or EPT. Mm-hmm. When I heard him speak and present that, I literally had tears in my eyes. Because for the first time, I felt like I had found my tribe. Mm. I was not alone. I wasn't this freak that doesn't fit in with the rest of the world or doesn't conform to what society wants us to do. It was like, there's other people out here and I'm not alone. And that was empowering, right? Because
definitely.
If you feel that way, if you feel like you're alone, then you feel like you're on this island and that there's something wrong with you. And it's like, you know, the old cartoon or the animated movie, like the Island of Misfit Toys, right? Rudolph movie. And it's like, I'm on the Island of Misfit Toys and I don't belong with everybody else. And then once you realize that, oh, wow, I'm not alone. There's other people out here that not only they get it, mm-hmm. but they're supportive. They're going through the same things you're going through. All of a sudden you can have this, you can be like, well, this is what I'm struggling with. And they're like, oh, yeah, I did that 3 months ago and here's what I did. And you create this community of people, or you join this community of people, and all of a sudden, it's like you see traction. So it's very exciting from that standpoint. But that's a little bit into the path of where I'm at. And I, you know, it's kind of cool because I, you know, I just told the story about how I drive down the strip and I see the Rolls Royce dealer, and I'm like, who the hell can buy these things? I think I've got 4 or 5 friends that I would, you know, guys that are in my network at this point that I would consider friends that own them. Mm-hmm. I still don't think it's for me. I don't think I'll ever buy one. I mean, you know, never say never, right? Like if we get making like $100 million a month or something crazy, you know, yeah, maybe shelling out $500,000 for a car doesn't seem like it's ridiculous.
Right. Right.
But at the end of the day, it's still a lot of money, no matter how much money you make. Mm-hmm. But I've got three friends. I've ridden in them. I've got three friends that own them. And I just go, wow, my network has dramatically changed in the last couple of years to the point where I was like, who in the world would buy these things? And now I'm like, I have friends that have these, you know. Yeah, they're nice, you know. But kind of, it's kind of interesting how that perspective shift happens.
That's funny. Do you feel like the perspective shift was one of the key moments for you that really helped you with that transition of feeling like you were lost as a business owner and then kind of made that difference for you? Do you feel like it was mindset?
Yeah, I would say, here's the thing. I know a lot of people at this point that would call themselves business owners, and they're across this broad spectrum of success.
Techie community, thank you again for joining us here for episode 77. No, that wasn't the end. That was only part one. Join us next week as we continue this exceptionally fun conversation with Dr. Matt Motil as he shares his wisdom, Central Perk stories, and insider views on the lateral industry trap that many fall victim to. Until our next episode, when we continue to hear the journey, find the pain, and create solutions. Enjoy the week.